Blog Talk Radio.
You ask me if I love you, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you honestly than mislead you with a lie. And who am I to judge you on what you say or do? I'm only just beginning to see the real you. And sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. Romance and all its strategy leaves me battling with my pride. But through the insecurity, some tenderness survives. I'm just another writer, still trapped within my truth. A hesitant prize fighter, still trapped within my youth. Sometimes when we touch, the honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides. At times I'd like to break you and drive you to your knees. At times I'd like to break through and hold you endlessly. At times I understand you, and I know how hard you try. I've watched while love commands you, and I've watched love pass you by. At times I think we're drifters, still searching for a friend, a brother or a sister, but then the passion flares again. The honesty's too much, and I have to close my eyes and hide. I wanna hold you till I die, till we both break down and cry. I wanna hold you till the fear in me subsides.
Hello world, you're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Liu Wildove and Grey Eyes Smith. We are brought to you by a poetry group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and we have anthologies available on Amazon filled with poetry from around the world, so feel free to check those out and help support these shows. That said, tonight's show is based on a contest that Liu Wildove and myself ran. And it's called, gotta get to it here. Quote by Maya Angelou, and it says, words mean more than what is said. down on paper, it takes a human voice to infuse with deeper meaning. And so that's the gist of tonight's show. Plus, there'll be some open poetry as well. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight. Okay, so I'm going to grab the first poem here. And this has a SoundCloud. This is by Weaver of Dreams. And it's called Without Hope. There we go.
There is a sense of mystery that surrounds what, although delicately constructed, is only a box. Does this lend veracity to a legend that may be all smoke and mirrors? Therefore, could it have been left unopened, unexplored, unnecessarily revered? Or be opened, given gifts untold, as Pandora hoped? Pandora had a choice, but it was not a balanced one. Her traits had been allocated to ensure that curiosity would relentlessly fester and test her, give her no rest. Lest her resolve falter, she was led to the altar, and then, physically and figuratively, given over, abandoned. The outcome was obvious. The only variable was when. This is a moot point, best left in the darkness of years past. Suffice to say, the day came, the key was turned. Screaming triumphantly, hordes of vindictive lesser demons brought forth plagues and pestilence, doom and gloom, and all manner of ill luck. Filled with terror, Pandora slammed the lid, trapping inside the hope of all mankind. All that was evil, mean, and low now pervaded poor Pandora. Once more a slave to her weakness, she played the tipless hand she had been dealt, leaving the last used body behind, limbs still trembling, the heat of arousal evident on her cheeks and brow, the realization of the treachery inflicted on her and by her left her spiraling into despair. Poor Pandora, misunderstood, misused, mishandled, and misconstrued.
Wow, that was a beautiful read, you know. She captured some great imagery, and the story was well told. You know, it was a sad summary of the tragedy of a tale from Pandora's perspective, and it was well written. You know, it was engaging, deep personification of Pandora and her box, just a haunting poem. Beautifully written, Weaver. I'm going to check the studio real quick here. We have a caller. Woo, woo. Hello, Pam.
Hey, Gray. How's it going?
It's going good. Thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Glad to hear. Nice to hear your voice.
Absolutely good to hear you. I see you picked a good choice to start the show off with. I always enjoy Weaver's SoundClouds, you know, and I'm a sucker for the underdog. Whenever somebody's the so-called bad guy in the story or bad gal, such as Pandora, I really like when someone takes that point of view. And you're right, she did a great job with writing from Pandora's point of view. I did like how she used all those miss words with at the end, poor Pandora, misunderstood, misused, mishandled, and misconstrued. And surprisingly, that mythology, really, I think it can pinpoint to a lot of history where, you know, in times when women weren't taken seriously, especially, you know, in like the witch trials, you know, it kind of brings to mind the witch trials, you know, and I like how she points out that Pandora had a choice, but it was not a balanced one. Her traits had been allocated to ensure that curiosity would relentlessly fester and test her, give her no rest. So wonderful lines there and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. Thank you so much for that. Okay, so I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam, when you see this.
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, you know what? I apologize. I can't.
Okay.
You want to grab a different one?
I'll give this one a read.
Okay.
Where Poets Dwell by Jeg 325. The wind doesn't blow in this place, nor does rain touch upon dry sand. Shadows wander without footprints and silently take my shaking hand. Light was forsaken, the barren land. Even death doesn't abide sad sight. Yet crimson rivers flow in impunity, cutting a swath through the dim night. Words flood dreams full of sadness for wounded poets unable to think. Never weeps drop from woeful eyes. Instead, we bleed pages dripping in ink. End poem. And, you know, I think that's a very relatable poem. You know, as poets, we tend to cry all our tears into poetry, and, you know, that's what makes it so relatable and palpable, is the emotions that go into it. Just a wonderful, right? Jeg 325. Pam, what did you think?
Well, I thought you did a wonderful read, and from what I heard, there was very haunting and dark imagery, the sense of feeling trapped in a place. And I have to agree with your statement that you made, Gray. One of the things that makes poetry so relatable, especially dark poetry, is the fact that people pour their emotions into it. So, very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind reading this one, please, Pam.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. All right. This word is a weapon by Vamped Vixen. This word is a weapon, this sentence, my gift of destruction. I see their black boots quake as they start to shake like snakes, arming themselves as my army of verbs come to walk, hike, tread, march, and storm. The sound of the nouns resounding out of my mouth must be a terrible noise to their traitorous ears. They're slowly starting to grasp that my lips can move like dancers and will fight for freedom to claim my kingdom from the silence they wanted to reign. I shall write each name down, put them on the wall for their sins to be read aloud in city center. The blackest ink from my pen will mark each deed and each when, marring the pages of history retold with truths that cannot and will not be sold. Their names will be known, so when it is time for them to go, the universe will understand what each one did. I was blessed with the gift of words, and they will soon learn that a writer is a terrible thing. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, this is a powerful poem. You know, it speaks with an inner room that, you know, here I stand. This is me. And like it or not, this is what I see as I'm a writer. And I'm going to tell the world and the universe what I see and who you are. You know, words definitely can be weapons and, you know, can often be abused, but I don't think they were in this context. It really is a powerful poem. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree with you. And I definitely agree with you that words are powerful and they can be used as weapons. But in this case, they're used for weapons, but for a greater good. And honestly, if a writer is focused on and pledged to telling the truth, the people they're writing about only have something to fear if they're doing something they don't want people to know about, or, you know, something that's well, obviously not good. And I like how she reminds us that as poets, as writers, we have that capability to speak the truth, to let people know the truth, and to, you know, let people who misrepresent history know that we will not allow that. And so excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Pam. And I'd like to welcome Liu Wildup to the show. Hello, Liu.
Hey,
hey,
guys. Hey, Pam. Hey. Hey, Gray. That was a good read, Pam.
Thank you.
Hi.
What did you think of the poem, Liu?
Well, you know, these are powerful words, you know. What happens is that, you know, Pam was bringing that out, you know, people can basically say anything they want. Sorry, I'm sleeping my medicine. They can say anything they want, but what you know, is frightening is when the reporters and the historians and people go back to start grasping what had gone down. And, you know, of course they take names and stuff like that. And it says that marring the pages of history told with truth that cannot and will not be sold. You know, you can only trick so much of the people so much of the time before the actual bearing of what happened will become factual.
Yeah, I agree. Great comment, Liu. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Liu.
Hold on, because I'm using my phone and my phone's slow. Okay, by Shannon Norman. What I would do, but I won't. You see, if I knew that I was really, really safe from eviction, from the streets, from jail, from homelessness, from frying pan syndrome, and from any other terrifying threat like that, I have it within my power to adorn this tiny home with the finest luxuries and decor. I could really spruce up that bathroom. I could add a few finishing touches to the bedroom. I could improve the living room significantly. I even have lots of untaped ideas for the backyard and the front yard. What I would do isn't the same thing of what I do. What I would do, but I won't, because I still don't feel safe and secure. You think a piece of paper is a foolish thing to put my trust into. You're not wrong, but you're not right either. End poem.
Beautiful read, Liu. You know,
great. She said not to read her poem.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so let's not comment and Chanel, and keep going.
Okay. Okay, well, sorry about that. I didn't notice. Okay, I'm going to post this next poem. This is by Soliloquy. Soliloquy. And it's called The Hard Words, a Buick-inspired verse. Outside my bedroom window, the rain is falling, rejuvenating the St. Augustine, while I, half-clad, wish that I would revive my heart, that I might find a love which I once held in my embrace, so that my wife might know our bonds were not washed away in the gales of an empty bottle of Jack Daniels atop the nightstand. Well, that was haunting. For such a little brevity, it really has an impactful nature to it, you know. The desperation is palpable in this, you know, where he's an alcoholic and his wife thinks that, you know, their bonds were washed away by the gales of an empty bottle of Jack Daniels that sat atop the nightstand. Well, it's beautiful, right?
Yeah, soliloquy has a real strength for writing brevities, and this one has a strong emotional impact. And you can just picture him sitting on the poets on the edge of their bed, or the character, and wishing they didn't have to constantly numb their feelings, wishing they could embrace and love their partner the way that they used to, and not feel like those bonds had been that washed away. I like that. So that my wife might know our bonds were not washed away. Just a beautiful, heartfelt write, and very well done.
Wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
Well, I went to go look what he wrote for this contest, and, you know, this is just very powerful as it is sad, you know, because, you know, he's setting it up here where he's, you know, he's sitting outside his bedroom window and the rain is falling, and he's clad, you know, only half draped. He says right here, wish that I could revive my heart, that I might find the love which I once held in my embrace. The thing is did he lose his wife because of death? Did he lose his wife because he didn't tell her he loved her enough? We don't know, but all, you know, when you're sad, this is just something that, you know, you do, you know, a lot of people do, is that you try to drink your sadness away. Wonderfully penned, deeply sad.
Beautiful comment, Lee. Okay, we have another caller here. I'm going to bring her on. Hello, and welcome to the show, Bobby.
Hi.
Hey,
sorry, I'm late, Bobby.
Hi.
I'm going to a concert tomorrow night, and I was trying to coordinate with the gal I'm going with.
Well, sounds like fun.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
What's that?
I said, that sounds fun.
Okay. Yeah, I want to coordinate because she's driving on one, she's teaching, and we wanted to make sure we had all our signals straight.
Sounds like
absolutely
fun. Be safe.
I hope so. It's been forever since I've been to a concert.
Yeah, I understand.
Did you get a chance to hear the poem by Soliloquy?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. All right, I've got the next poem up. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's by
In a Dream. Caged Bird by Maya Angelou. In a pod I peek out a window, scissors sit curly on the porch, listening to the chirping of birds above the wind. Suddenly this getting light, rattling leaves join the tourists. Jagged watcher wintery as bound in a world of wonderland, round of wind. Exquisitely setting in a chimera of cotton fields, as the moon has powered. As I caress my ever feathers, the kitchen under the morning sun, all the nests for the desert birdwise, the paper thin wings still quiver. Sharing words in bed, skin showed consciousness bound in my benumbed bed. Transporting cool winter breeze through the embodiment. You don't stop. Stars being his intended team, moonbeams passing with head of team, result word by his dream, a second by Jan's dream. Thank you.
And that was a beautiful poem. You know, you can picture all of this as he describes it. When his parched eyes peek out of the window, children sit coyly on the porch, listening to the chirping of birds above stubble, suddenly pitch catching light, and rattling leaves join the chorus, the delicate watcher, momentary earthbound in a color world of one color, the sound of wind exquisitely trudging in the chimera of cotton field as if the moon had flowered. You know, a cotton field does look like the moon, you know, had flowered. I can see that. It was a beautiful acquiescence to that. Just a wonderful, right? Fantastic. So, yeah, what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I thought this had beautiful imagery and metaphors all the way through. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful sound cloud with the whistling of the birds in the background. And I like the imagery in this. The delicate watcher momentarily earthbound in a world of one color, the sound of wind exquisitely trudging in a chimera of cotton fields as if the moon had flowered. Beautiful lines there and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you. And Pat, what did you think?
Well, I thought that he did a beautiful poem to this quote where if you look at the bottom, it says, and for this he saw, for one moment breathless and intent, vivid on the morning sky, and still as he looked, he lived, and still as he lived, he wondered. You know, there's something about being frozen in nature and looking at all her beauty, the different, the bees, the birds, the flowers budding and, you know, how life just continues to go on and it sustains us no matter how hard we've made it for it. But, you know, it's just wonderful when you find that just where it's a poet or a painter or somebody who sculpts, they see this beautiful scene and all they want to do is recreate it. And I thought he did a beautiful job of recreating this with his beautiful imagery.
Well said. Thank you, Lee. And Bobby, what did you think?
I'm rereading this, and I'm getting a message, I guess, different from everyone else. And the first stanza, it says, "Frozen in a frame, caged bird," by Maya Angelou. So I'm keeping this in mind as I'm reading this, and I read the first stanza, "When my parched eyes peek out of the window." Okay, the protagonist is looking out a window. Join the chorus, the delicate watcher, momentarily earthbound in a world of one color. I get the impression from the first stanza that this is a pet bird, a caged bird, who is next to the window and looking out. And as he's looking out, and by the way, only the males sing. And as I caress my ruffled feathers, they glisten under the morning sun. Okay, it's in the window, but then it's looking at its unconscious warmth beneath benumbed blood. I'm getting the impression that the bird is imagining, especially in the third stanza, freedom flaps, stars wink with enchanted dreams. The bird is imagining what it's like to be free, and that's what I'm getting. It transitions from cage, from captive, to free through the second and third stanza, and that's what I'm seeing in this.
Well, great comment, Bob. That was a wonderful, insightful comment. Thank you for sharing. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And I'll post this up, and when you see it, Pam, could you give that a read, please?
Sure. All right. Phototaxis by Curtis X. Meyer. And it goes like this. From the Greek photo meaning light and the Latin taxis for the movement of an organism or cell in response to a stimulus, it means how living things react to light. How the world dances in my mouth, trampoline backflips off my tongue as a chant, phototaxis, phototaxis. Roaches scatter with a flip of a switch like shards of shattered glass. A flame doesn't detract. Moths, it confuses them, strobe lights, disorient partygoers, parades of torches, and hounds hunt for slaves escaped in the night. Parades of flashlights and German shepherds hunt for immigrants hopping the border at dusk. A man sees blue and red in his rearview mirror, spotlight in his face, asked for a license and registration, photo taxes. We stop on red, go on green, a form of hypnosis, photo taxes. Our eyes transfixed on TV and computer screens like deer caught in high beams, photo taxes. A sea turtle inches closer towards extinction because her hatchlings mistake the glow of skyscrapers and beachside condos for the moon, crawling over sand dunes as prey. For nighttime gulls and raccoons, the 4th of July, neon signs in Vegas, photo taxes, a child blinking inside a family portrait, photo taxes, an actress stands paralyzed by the size of Times Square as a minnow readies itself for the jaws of an anglerfish, a species of deep-sea jellyfish, ignites itself not only to stun its would-be predator, but to reveal that predator's position, calling the attention of bigger fish to come feast on its antagonist. But mostly, I imagine Joan of Arc illuminating the dark like the embodied of Eureka, turning her head like a flower towards the sun, woods sparking fireworks to send her embarking on a quest towards unknown destination all the while. A boy peeks out from the crowd, longing to know intimately the beacon beckoning him to touch tenderly the body of a woman, curious, as she stands steadfast, a lighthouse in the face of orange waves, smoke rising, drops of ocean foam. He knows with such rays of God, pure love will surely singe his eyes, blind him, judge him as he has been judged. He is not so much allured or enraptured, but confused by the condition of his unconditional mercy, aware he cannot retreat, no risk getting close, lest he be burned, and yet something deep inside him cannot bring itself to look away. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, somebody grabs a word like this and digs into the depth and meaning of it and expresses it in the manner that he has. It's just a fantastic thinker, you know, when he goes into a child blinks inside a family portrait, photo taxes, an actor stands paralyzed by the size of Times Square as a minnow readies itself in the jaws of an anglerfish, a species of deep-sea jellyfish, ignites itself not only to stun its would-be predator, but to reveal that predator's position, calling the attention of bigger fish to come and feast on its antagonist. And then, you know, Joan of Arc, he pictures her illuminating the dark like the embodiment of Eureka, turning her head like a flower towards the sun, wood sparking fire to send her embarking on a quest towards unknown destination. And then, you know, his descriptions are definitely relatable and draw you in throughout the write. I thought he captured the essence of photo access amazingly well. And thank you for introducing me to the word. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that was really clever to bring in that word phototaxis and put it throughout and give examples. I've heard before that the sea turtle one about them going towards the lights of skyscrapers, mm-hmm. and you know, being talented will actually require people to use as little lights as possible, or dim their lights,
yep.
so that the sea turtles are less likely to see them. I thought that was a fine example. I also like that he brought in at the end Joan of Arc. And even to me, I like the general theme of this rite, which is that oftentimes we fear the same light that we admire. So excellent rite and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, I really, like everybody else, enjoyed this poem from the beginning to end, where he used the different instances where photo taxis could be used for, you know, the movement of light. And I like the example that Pam gave about the turtles and stuff like that. But I got a kick because in some ways he says, the word dances in my mouth like a trampoline. Back flips off my tongue as a chant. Phototaxis, phototaxis. And then he just keeps putting down more instances where the sources of light can affect human beings, can affect the animals and their nature and everything. And I got a big kick where I liked how he put things in here very serious, but at the same time things that we don't normally think about. Like another thing that made me laugh with, you know, you could see his humor here, was a man sees blue and red in his rear view mirror spotlight, and his and his face asked for license and registration, photo taxes. I got a big kick out of that. All of them. I liked all the examples he used.
Great comment. Thank you, thank you, Lee. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I thought this was a brilliant piece. To take a scientific term like phototaxis, which is the locomotory movement of any kind of motile organism, their reaction to light, either toward or away, to take that and use it to punctuate a poem, and also the different examples, everything as Lou, you said, the reaction to traffic signals. That's bloody brilliant. Taken different examples out of context and built this whole poem around the reactions to light. I think this is a very cerebral piece. You as you read it, you have to think about each of the examples and its significance and how it interrelates to the word phototaxis. I really, really like this piece. I'm going to tuck it away in my favorites.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Bobby, for that great comment. Okay, Lou, I'm posting the next one if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay. By Poetic Prince?
Yes.
Poetry is Beautiful by Poetic Prince. R.W. Poetry is a most powerful instrument, like a flute to be played. Also, it is a pungent possibility, like a newly created perfume put on, yet free to all and for all to wear. This is to be adorned and is one of the most of the highest solemn calls, words that are spoken and then engraved, never to be forgotten or ignored. It can reshape the world that is in pieces and so torn, a restorative medicine to a life that is very, very worn, an elixir of life and a healer of life beset by strife, a lifter of our inner thoughts and our buried emotions, a firework explosions rising up to the newer dimension, a reversal of toxiphonies, man-made devastations, words of pretty portraits and musical orchestras and artistical words, seen stitched and woven and fashionably embroidered, also made into a steely, shining sword. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Lena. And, you know, this poem is powerful as he speaks. You know, poetry is the most powerful instrument, like a flute to be played. It's also a pungent possibility, like a newly created perfume put on, yet free to all and for all to wear. This is to be adorned and is one of the most highest of solemn calls, words that are spoken and then engraved, never to be forgotten or ignored. You know, just the power of poetry itself is a beautiful expression in his poem, and I thought it was excellent, right? What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. I like how this speaks about the power of words, the power of music, and it's wonderful all the way through, but I especially love that he refers to it as a restorative medicine to a life that is very, very worn, an elixir of life, a healer of lives. So excellent lines and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Dee, what are your thoughts?
I thought that this was nicely penned. I loved, you know, how it is true, how poetry can be very powerful to some people, and it's actually a way of release where they can release themselves. And I really liked how he caught that this here. It says that you know, even though the world is, you know, sometimes being torn apart, when we read poetry, it can be a restorative medicine. It says, especially, you know, he's pointing out here with this, that when a life is very worn and is very tired, he says that poetry can heal, and it says, and it can lift your inner thoughts and buried emotions so that you can find a way or a pathway, or, you know, understand that just knowing that other people are going through the same thing is also very encouraging to other people, knowing that you understand what they're talking about or writing about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Thank you for that great comment. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. This is a great piece that talks about poetry, but if you look at it in its essence, it's talking about the power of the word, of speech, how much power the command of language can give you. It can reshape the world, restorative medicine, fireworks explosion, a reversal of cacophonies. The wonderful litany of examples here, I mean, very comprehensive, well thought out piece, I think very illustrative of the power of the command of language and of speech and of writing.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, Bobby, I have the next one up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. Okay, let me go to... Bum-ba-da-ba. We have Gently Sway by Kasia F. Ocean deep, heart sacred, hearing words makes me blind. The whisper of the ocean's voice speaks directly to my core. The seagulls all around just to hear that human sound. My heart broken in pieces, surely it's hard to speak. Words from thong is the missing link. I feel that words are empty space. The depth can always be replaced. Isn't not the in the words I speak, but the actions I see. Thong is words spoken, written as a camouflage of what the human soul can show. Everything is cheap unless it is the action that flowed imprinted from the human soul. Never believed in words or language spoken that seal so easily broken. If your arms that hold me tight, no words express the love in your heart. We all speak so much that we seek one different from another. It truly does not matter. Actions are pure reactions to love, to be or dove that sends you free. No words will ever compare to the way your eyes gently sway. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. A touching, heartfelt poem, you know, expresses her inner insecurities, you know, where you're lost in this ocean of deep words that make you blind, and the whisper of the ocean voice speaks directly to her core. The seagulls all around just to hear that human sound. My heart broken in pieces. Sure, it's hard to speak. Words form thong. Words from thong is the missing link. Just a hard-hitting, insightful, introspective poem. What did you think, Lee?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah,
yes.
You know, I can understand her sentiments. You know, sometimes when we're suffering or we're going through something, sometimes some of us write. And here it says for her, the only thing that she could find that would heal her soul was the gentle sway of the ocean sounds, listening to the seagulls around her. And she says that, you know, at this time she says that she felt that words are an empty space. The depth can always be replaced. And, you know, that is true. Sometimes we find our healing out in nature and not necessarily in what somebody said or has written. It just depends on what it is that you need to heal yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great comment, Leah. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Reading the author's note, I thought this was very interesting. She says, my dearest host, I love Maya Angelou. Her poems have touched my heart, but for some reason, I found that not words but actions speak louder. And the way she expresses it in here, there's still the reverence, the respect for words, but you can see the stress it stresses the action. Never believed in words or language spoken that seal so easily broken. If your arms that hold me tight, no words express the love in your heart. And there it is captured right there, the actions speaking louder than the words. I think this is a beautiful piece. It's very elegantly written and very close to being lyrical.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem, and this is by Albert Shepherds, and he has a SoundCloud.
Love's Folly by Albert Shepherds. Garden path between the many colored petals led to love and to our secret folly. Such fools we are in youth, of true love not to know, enchanted only by intense bouquet.
Beautiful read. And, you know, for a brevity, that's definitely that. He says in his author's notes, he says, folly here has two meanings that related to being foolish, but also the traditional garden folly, that garden structure that has no real purpose except for the tryst and to fall in love. Beautiful poetry. Excellent write, excellent read as well. What did you think, Leah?
Well, you know, when I was listening to him read this, you know, especially now that with this author notes, you know, that's what gardens were built for, to be enjoyed and for lovers to go and be induced by the sweet smell of the flowers and everything that's in there. And it is true, you know, when we're younger, we don't understand the depth of real love and of relationships. And yeah, you are, your hormones tend to work more than your brain. But in any event, I just thought this was beautiful and a lovely read.
Well said. Thank you, Leah. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I agree with Leah. This is a very well-written brevity and a very eloquent expression of such the second stanza. Such fools we are in youth of true love, not to know enchanted only by intense bouquet. Our feelings are stimulated by visual, by physical beauty, and as we grow old, we realize that that's transitory, and the true beauty is in the soul. I think it's a beautifully written piece.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's called Glimpse on Words by Black Bud. Glimpse on Words. Word banned by love, engulf round the heart at robe with 100 tongues of fire, all born of delights burning entire. When prolonged muted rage asleep awakes with the cannon's voice to reap, words strike the darling breast like pointed swords and fangs of beast. Curved with warmness of heart, words weld two loving ships with trust. No bolt polished storm nor gossip's gust can wreck the twin vessels apart. Words planted with poet's hands sprout fresh vision in the brain's wasted land and blossom like bright lilies, white, perfuming the blind with sight. Words knit the threads of light and beacons of hope to every weary rite. White, wrapped in the dark folds of night. Such words are garments of relief to souls trapped in the noose of grief, who rise again and shine on in greater splendor than the sun. And that was a beautiful rite, you know. It has an excellent rhyme scheme to it as well. I really enjoyed it. It has fantastic imagery as it was descriptive and engaging throughout the poem. What did you think, Lou?
Well, I thought that you did a good job in reading Black Bud's poem. I do like a lot of his wonderful imagery here where, you know, he said that when he was looking at the words, he says that the words were fanned by love, engulfed around the heart at rove with 100 tongues of fire of born delights burning entire. You know, that emotion and that feeling you hear with somebody that is speaking to you in words of endearment. And then, you know, and then he talks about, I also liked where he talked about cured with the warmness of heart, words weld by two loving ships with trust, no false polished storms nor gossip gusts can wreck the twined vessels apart. And, you know, and that's another thing, you know, that, he realizes that people don't realize in a relationship you're two separate people, even though you become one, you're still separate. And what I liked about that was he showed that they were both separate and that both of them would have to be watching out for not to allow the relationship to be broken up by false stories or somebody's gossip. He says, because that is exactly what will pull them apart. I did like those stanzas. Back to you.
Great comment, Lou. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I'm struck by how this piece addresses the same topic, the power of language, the power of words, the command of the language, but it does it from such a different approach. I find that bloody marvelous. It's still speaking of the power of language, the power of words, the spoken and the written word, and the way this is another very cerebral rite, the visual imagery, the metaphors. LNC needs to create a award, and we call it the Pam Ray Metaphor Award. Because Pam's my paradigm, and anyone even come close to doing to creating metaphors the way that Pam does, as far as I'm concerned, has climbed the top of the mountain. Here we have a Pam Ray a Metaphor Award here. Beautiful, beautifully constructed metaphors. The expression curved with the warmness of heart, words weld two loving ships with trust, no false polished storm. And yet, like Luya said, it still stresses the fact that two half people do not make a whole person, that you have to be whole to be in a successful relationship. And it says it with such subtlety and such eloquence. Very, very beautifully done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Okay, Lydia, I have the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay. By Kenny W. Excuse me?
I said, and then we'll get into some open poetry.
Okay. Well, the open poetry was on top.
I know.
I don't know if anybody put anything on the bottom. Kenny W. Passionless Pixel. Poet, I looked at your type words lying dormant on my screen for a minute, imagining them on posh Bastogne Bond paper from England, handwritten in fountain pen black ink, being beautiful yet unspoken, so gentle on my eye. Throw your words now fly off the page, shaping up feeling, caressing my desires. This is somehow still not quite enough. And so my lips silently mouth your poem, feeling your rhythm and your meter, your rhyme and your reason, your senses and sensibility. Upon your work ending, I look again at my laptop and those static characters resting on it. And I decide now I must give them life. And sounding like Tom Waits' bastard son, slowly begin reading aloud to my surprised border collie. And she does not care. I sound through her laryngitis. She cocks her ear and head in poetic appreciation. Poet once written, recited loudly to whoever listened, be it spouse, cat, dog, goldfish, or any other friend, you may find new meaning in the words that you have penned. You will also add emotion where dull letters did just for. You may express love, hope, and fear, and laughter. You may reevaluate the phrases in the stories you have written. You may otherwise decide, this one's for the bin. End poem.
Wow. That was a powerful poem on the subject of being the recipient of poetry and how you engage in that and how it engages with you. I thought it was a fantastic representation of poetry itself. Just a beautiful poem. What did you think, Bobby?
I agree. It is a very interesting expression of the power of poetry. That last stanza really captures me. You may find new meaning in the words that you have penned. You will add emotion where dull letters did just bore. You may express love, hope, and fear and laughter. You may reevaluate the phrases in the stories you have written. You may otherwise decide, this one's for the bin. And I find myself, stanza, it captured me because it reminds me, I'll write something and then I'll just keep going back to it and rereading it. It's like a new pair of shoes. I can't get enough of it until the next one. And then I can't get enough of it until the next one. And that's, that feeling of creation when your poets once written recite loudly to whoever listen, be it spouse, cat, dog, goldfish, or any other friend, because I think in rereading, especially aloud, you get to relive the joy of the creation because you've assembled words in an order that didn't exist until you pushed a noun against a verb and made that combination. So you feel like everything's been said, but it hasn't. And I think this is a beautiful example. My lips silently mouth your poem, feeling your rhythm and your meter, your rhyme and your your reason, your senses and sensibilities. Great alliteration in this, by the way. The language, the command of language in this is really superlative. Very well, I mean, it even talks about posh Basil and Bont paper from England. The details in this, handwritten in fountain pen black ink. Again, the visual imagery. I really like this piece. It's complex. It makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Bobby. Great comment. Okay. Bobby, would you mind reading for Jack Tomkovic, please?
I'll do my best to channel him.
Okay.
Hey, I just finished writing a piece where I did a little gender reassignment. I wrote it as a man. What the hell, you know? Bambi Revisited by Jack Tomkovic. Rabbit and fawn upon the lawn. Thumper and Bambi meet at dawn. Both nibbling grass and clover. Thumper, move on over. Running, jumping, so close they touching noses, and then run through the roses, scampering off toward new smells to run, green fun in morning sun. Will they party again in the morn? Visit my yard and see sweet little Thumper and Bambi. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And, yeah, you know, I thought it was a fantastic relation to revisit to his this wonderful scene of this rabbit and fawn upon the lawn, Thumper and Bambi meet at dawn. You know, he has a wonderful rhyme in that first stanza. And, you know, the whole poem is engaging and uplifting. You know, the innocence that is being shared and viewed by you is just fabulous. Lucky guy to have this in your yard, Jack. So just a beautiful write and fantastic read, Bobby. Lee, what did you think?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the way Bobby read this poem. I loved what he was writing down. And, you know, he's been so serious lately, so this was a nice poem about what he sees going on in his yard, watching this little rabbit and fawn. And, you know, and of course, when we see things, it always triggers memories or things that we've seen in the past or nursery rhymes. And I liked how, you know, he put that in there. For me, I love to go to the park, and we have wild rabbits. And they, when they start watering the lawn, they just come out of everywhere and hop around, and just to have a cup of coffee and just to sit there and watch that. I mean, it's nature uplifts the soul, and I really enjoyed this poem.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. I mean, Lee, thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I enjoyed it also. And I agree with Lou. He has been a bit dour here lately, and the fact that he's come back to his whimsical and lighthearted humor is a nice return. And it reminds us how much joy there is in simple things, watching wild things just mm-hmm. do what they do. And enjoying that. And
exactly.
He says in his author's note, I had an actual rabbit and fawn in my front yard last year. Really cool piece and enjoy. And you can. You watch them in their freedom, and to watch two species interacting is always also very fascinating. Mm-hmm. Itself, they can get along. Why the hell can't we?
Exactly.
Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Poetic Picasso, and he has a SoundCloud, so I will play that. Okay.
There's something about those round lips of cherry blossom I crave. It's that glisten exuding from your sexy smile that's so captivating. And it makes your electric eyes shine like a morning rainbow, lighting up the delicate contours of your blushing cheeks. I could feel the moisture, the purity of your stunning beauty reflected in the tender look of your sweet smile, so tempting as you stare at me with a clever wink of playful concupiscence, and I just melt within the swoon of the bashful sunshine. My inquisitive eyes dance with the splendid grace of your smile as I dip into the fountain of the glittering sparkles of its radiance, and I touch the true essence of its magic and its mysticism with the mere caress of my gentle fingers stroking your pretty face. Your smile is a strong spell, enrapturing me in its seduction, causing me to be passionately blinded by its virginal gleam. As I stare deeper into the mystery of its vibrant aura of exoticism, I am completely swept into the unique realm of its eroticism. Be the special one to entertain me with your teasing smile from that penetrating look of wildfire burning in your eyes, and show me the sultry sex appeal that drives me so crazy with only the sensual glance of a facial expression of yours. Damn that smile. Oh, damn that sexy smile. In the poem.
Well, Frank, I mean, you had Liu giggling, so that's powerful.
I didn't. What happened to Bobby? Is she still breathing?
I'm not sure. I wonder if her seatbelt was fastened or not.
Because I know me when it comes to Frank. I wouldn't have stopped laughing.
But no, the man has a way with words, that's for sure. You know, this is completely engaging throughout and truly endearing to the capture of her beautiful smile. You know, how much that brings into his world and his existence is palpable for sure. Just a beautiful read as well. You know, he's got that voice actor thing going on. And I thought he did a fantastic job with it. What did you think, Lee?
Well, I do. I do believe he did a great, fantastic job with this. Muy caliente. I mean, I loved right here where, congratulations on the gold medal, Frank, where he says that sexy smile that is captivating. And it makes, I love this part, makes your electric eyes shine like a morning rainbow. I thought that was beautiful. And then you start talking about how when she smiles, that the light of the contours of her cheeks, you can see her cheekbones. And another thing that I really liked with this was there was something here. Well, there's I mean, I like every stanza, but it's just like, I think I got My eyes are looking cross-eyed because I got too excited. I can't read.
You're going to be all right.
There was something I know, and I'm even coughing. I liked where he said that your teasing smile, the penetrating wildfire burning in your eyes, and show me that sultry sex, that appeal that drives me so crazy, and the facial expressions, you know, that you make when you're really highly sexually attracted to somebody. And then I got a big kick of how he read that couplet at the end. It not only was it very like a sensual piece, but it was also, I love humor, and I think humor is sexy, and just something about how his voice changed and where he read, damn, that smile. Oh, damn, that sexy smile. I got a big kick out of that. So I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, apparently so. Bob, what did you think?
Lily's right. The humor in it is there. It's subtle. If you can you bare your soul when you laugh. If you can bare your body, you should be able to bare your soul with someone. But I tell you, Frank's tools are words. Words are his tools, but his voice is a goddamn aphrodisiac.
Wow, great comment, Bobby. Great comment, Bobby. Okay, so we've got a poem here by the writer C, and I will give this a read. And Bobby, did you want to look for a open poetry poem while I read this?
You had one of my pieces in there for Maya Angelou. Did I read it already?
I'm not sure.
Don't. Did you read it?
I haven't read it.
Did you read it? I can go back and get it.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to because I don't see it on
the list. Because I wasn't sure. Because he wasn't sure which ones were read, and I didn't want to.
Oh,
okay.
I didn't read it. I didn't read it during this program.
Yeah.
Did you read it?
No, not during
this
program.
Have you read it yet? Okay, all right. I'll go back and get it.
I'll go back and
get it what Gray reads.
Okay.
I thought he wasn't sure who read and who hadn't read. Okay.
The writer C, and it's called Catfish. I wish I stopped when I had the chance, but I was a sucker for a fairy tale romance. Feeling good, looking my best, I put 5620 in my GPS. But my feelings had produced a genre with mystery and suspense because I'm sitting at the location, sharing an empty lot and a fence. Wow. That was great. For a little brevity, you know, it's definitely a hard-hitting poem, especially the ending. But my feelings produce a genre with mystery and suspense because I'm sitting at a location staring at an empty lot and fence. Beautiful, right? Excellent, right? Lee, what did you think?
I didn't hear you read it because I was looking for the poem.
Well, I could have done that.
For Bobby.
Well,
sorry,
that.
That's okay. I can read it real quick.
Yeah, it's a
go
brevity.
Ahead and ask Bobby what she thinks.
Yes, it's a very good brevity. I just heard the word catfish for the first time today. And so how fortuitous, because otherwise I would have thought of, an aquatic life form. But I found out what catfish means colloquially today. And this is a great piece. I mean, I was a sucker for a fairy tale romance. My feeling produces genre because I'm sitting at the location staring at an empty lot and a fence. We want to believe the best in people, but unfortunately, sometimes we get duped. To go through life without trust is an exhausting way to live. And this piece is, it shows how sometimes you can get tripped up just by being, you know, wanting the best and being an optimist. And, you know, it's like today, you know, chicken feathers today, chicken salad tomorrow. This one's chicken feathers.
Wonderful comment, Bobby. And Lou, what did you think?
Well, I went to go look to see what he was talking about, you know, because this is what they've been telling people. It says catfish isn't just a fish with whiskers. It is a term for a person who pretends to be someone else online. The catfish uses fake photos and sometimes a fake persona to find friends or romantic partners on the internet. You know, and that's the whole problem. You don't know who you're talking to, who you're getting involved with on the net. Of course, we've gotten to know each other on here, so we all know that we're not the fishes in the pond, even though we may want you to feed us a little nibble. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, there's nothing worse than getting involved with somebody, and then you drive to where they supposedly live, and all you get is nothing. Yeah. I really enjoyed the poem. And, you know, this happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely it does, yeah.
Very contemporary and very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, okay, Bobby, if you wouldn't mind reading your poem, I'll repost it here.
Of course not.
Okay.
All righty. And Luya was nice enough to let me submit this, even though the contest was closed. But I had actually written this for a brevity contest, but it had the Maya Angelou quote wasn't one of your prompts, but I really, really liked it. And so that's why I went with this. And the quote is, "Nothing can dim the light which shines from within." And this piece is called A Woman of Radiance. She breathes in the sunshine and her countenance kisses the sky. Her smile drives the clouds into hiding, challenging the sun's brilliance. Here a spirit so incandescent, soul so rapturous, she steals soul's light, absorbing its radiance so the umbra beside her is as pitch as deep space. Her occlusion shadow as black as the ocean of emptiness above Terra. To live in her pure light of being is to dwell in the effulgence of a poem. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read, Bobby. And this is such a touching poem. You know, it speaks to the beauty of the woman. And she breathes in the sunshine and her countenance kisses the sky. Her smile drives the clouds into hiding, challenging the sun's brilliance. Here a spirit so incandescent, soul so rapturous, she steals soul light. I thought it was just a wonderful poem, Bobby. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It's just brilliant throughout the whole poem. And I quote to you, I said, "Stunningly brilliant and reverential ode to the power of a woman's spirit." And then in your author's note, you say, "Shadows are made by blocking light. Light rays travel from a source in straight lines. If a opaque, bracketed, solid object gets in the way, it stops the light from traveling through it. The result is an area of darkness appearing behind the object. The more intense and bright the light being abstracted, the deeper the shadow is that result." So, yeah, beautiful poem, Bobby, and a fantastic read as well. Lee, what did you think of Bobby's poem?
It's beautiful. It's radiant. It's just gorgeous. There's something about a woman, and that just either under moonlight, full moon, or full sun, where you go outside and you stretch your your arms out where it says her smile drives the clouds into hiding, challenging the sun's brilliance. You know, and I just thought this was so beautiful because women have the capability to absorb so much of nature's light, so much of nature's energies, and I just thought this was just absolutely beautiful from the top to the bottom, Bobby.
Thank you very much.
And would you like to say anything about your poem, Bobby?
I'm going to go back to my favorite thing, which is film references. I can't, more years ago than I care to admit to, I saw, when it came out in theater, 2001, Space Odyssey. One of the things I never forgot about this, and you're going to think this is the left field. There's a scene where the astronaut is trying to do something, and he's got the light that's coming in is so bright that when he puts his hand somewhere, the shadow is so deep he cannot see into it. And I never forgot the fact that the brighter the light, the deeper the shadow next to it. And I found that profound. Not only scientifically, but philosophically. And that's why I say her occlusion shadow is as black as the ocean of emptiness above Terra. The brilliance from the person's soul, their spirit, is so bright that the shadow next to them just blots out everything. You can't see for the radiance, for the brilliance. But I just, that was something that's always stuck with me, and I don't know why. You know, strange child. You know, I've always loved science. I've always been fascinated by it. But it's like with the phototaxic. The same thing. You can introduce these scientific principles, but you can do them in such a way that they illuminate what you're talking about. And that's what when I talk about the brilliance that the sunshine and the countenance, or countenance kisses the sky. This is a radiance that comes from within. I'm not talking about physical beauty. I'm talking about beauty of the soul, beauty of the spirit.
Yeah. And it's absolutely beautiful, Bobby.
Thank you.
Okay, Lou, I have the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay. By Sharp, S. Sharp. And it is titled, Humanity Shades Darkness. The cold breath of humanity bristles the fine hair upon one's neck as to the calculus turns in the gray light to serve injustice as a last meal of sanity, of light, where the only consistency is humanity's shadow on dark event shades the next. Christ nailed upon the cross, sacrifices for forgiveness, the crusades deliver heretics their due, intolerance wrapped as justice, one man better than the next. I bring you the black death, witch hunts, persecution of Jews chopped to pieces to cure the plague, forced servitude across the globe, builds the next future, Salem witch trials, in the name of religion, kill them all. Trail of tears, obstacles of advancement, moved world wars, the Holocaust, the great Chinese famine, the Holodomor, Roman Catholic sex abuse, Kelmer Rube torture and murder of millions, Rwanda, Chechnya, Bosnia, darkness shades darkness. Shades darkness, shades darkness, shades darkness, and poem.
Beautiful reading.
Wow.
And his prompt was, he walked out on the gray light and stood, and he saw for a brief moment the absolute truth of the world, the cold, relentless circling of the interstate earth, darkness, implacable. The bind dogs of the sun in their running, the crushing black vacuum of the universe, and somewhere, two hunted animals trembling like ground foxes in their cover, borrowed time and borrowed world and borrowed eyes with which to sorrow it. End poem. I mean, end quote, and it's by the road. But no, this is a beautiful poem on the subject of the darkness of humanity and all of its acts and, you know, these terrible things such as the Trail of Tears. They were just obstacles of advancement. And then they were moved. World Wars, the Holocaust, the Great Chinese Famine, the Holodomor, the Roman Catholic sex abuse, Khmer Rouge, torture and murder of millions, Rwanda, Chechnya, Bosnia, darkness. Wow, that's a serious poem on the subject of the darkness of humanity. Wow. What did you think, Leah?
You know, I just thought this was a fantastic poem. You know, it's very heavy because that is what humanity is. They've justified so many things due to their bloodlines, due to their hierarchy, due to their religion, due to the coloring of the race. I mean, it's all in here. You know, it's when you actually study these different things and go look at these different crimes against humanity, you know, you would think, you know, they keep saying, well, we need to talk about this because this is the only way we're going to keep repeating the mistakes. But we're watching the mistakes being committed right now in Ukraine, you know. So it's just like you keep hoping man's going to lose with this immense blood loss and prejudices that lead all these horrific conflicts. You know, it's just darkness and it gets lifted and then it gets dark again and it gets lifted. But, you know, the thing is that how much blood has been spilt before you can lift that next shade of darkness.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Haunting poem. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I like Louie's comment, and I agree. This is from the Cormac I can't think of it. Hang on a second, my brain just checked out for a second here. Oh, it's back now. Cormac McCarthy. drugs and therapy just don't always work. McCarthy quotes from Richard's contest, and it's from the his work, The Road. But it is a prime example. It's a litany of man's inhumanity to man. And it reminds me of the, I believe the philosopher George Santayana said, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And it seems like that is unfortunately an all too human trait. We tend to ignore some of the things that we have done, and then all of the things that, and it's interesting, he cites the great injustices, the cruelties that we have done to each other in the name of religion, in the name of politics, mm-hmm. in the name of conquest, in the name of power, in the name of righteousness, in the name of eminent domain. Pick a reason. You know, we can adapt it to the point where we can distort it and pervert it to the point where we are doing things that are just horrendous to each other. One of the things I'm going to do it again. I'm going to make another film reference. there are certain films that I absolutely refuse to watch. I will end my days never having seen these films, and quite contentedly. One of them is the franchise, The Saw. When the first one came out, I read the synopsis and I read the interview of the screenwriter, and he said I didn't come up with anything new. He said I went back into history and looked at what humans did to each other during the Spanish Inquisition. Things like strapado and the rack and some of the, he said, I didn't make this up. He said, I read it in history. And when I read that, I was horrified. I just was like, holy sh! You know, it's just, we didn't have to make this up. It existed. And the fact that some brain, some human somewhere have, you know, what, how can we inflict physical discomfort on someone to the extreme that they beg for death, and that's it seems like we have, some people have this talent for this, and we're reminded in this piece that unfortunately it punctuates human history all too much. But then again, if you look at the reverse of it, if you look at examples like Orwell's 1984. Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World, the film The Giver. Here are all examples of a dystopian society where emotions have been outlawed. They've been chemically treated out. They've been factored out of the equation. And what you have is shades of gray. So unfortunately, we are a species of extremes. And here these extremes have been cited with painful eloquence.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is
great
a song
comment.
By David Meyerhoff. In the pleading hours of the dawn, he awakened to the desperation of life, circumstance, and his inner prison, shackled by the golden chains of comfort zone, unable to express the full glory of potential by taking the risks of venture, paralyzed in place by both by manacles and by fear, he lifted his voice in song of despair, of longing, and of hope. The tune wafted through the space of home and beyond, rising even higher in a wall of beseeched and hidden chord of power. Tune merges with tune, a chorus of subtlety and ethereal beauty, sweet yet strong, in harmony with all in the universe of vibration, otherworldly yet grounded in the one imprisoned below. To marshal the forces of the universe in overturning the programming of yesterday and allow a change of nature to slough off the chains and the fears and meet the future with maximum possibility. And it's based on a quote, words mean more than what is said it down on paper. It takes the human voice to infuse them with deeper meaning. And, you know, you can feel the desperation and the sadness and the lostness of his poem. You know, it really does come together for an uplifting ending to marshal the forces of the universe in overturning the programming of yesterday and allow for change of nature to slough off the chains and fears and meet the future with maximum possibility. It's just a haunting poem of darkness and despair, and then, you know, you get the uplifting ending, which is a beautiful thing. But just a wonderful rate. What did you think, Leah?
You know, I was just listening to you comment, listening to you read his poem. And, you know, so many of us have different fears that we're having to deal with each day, whatever's going on in our lives, whatever issues we're having, or, you know, just personal issues with fear, whatever that fear is that we're trying to deal with. You know, and, you know, it really, to me, you know, right here where he goes, where he starts off this song, in the pleading hours of the dawn, he awakened to the desperation of life circumstances, his inner prison. You know, that you know, where you wake up and you just have, you know, a bad dream or whatever's gone through the day, just this panic attack. And, you know, and any type of issue we're dealing with, it does feel like golden chains that, you know, you just can't get off of you. And, you know, and sometimes you do feel paralyzed. And, you know, and for me, what I find the answer to is the tune of ethereal beauty, that sweet harmony, that's, you know, there's so many positive things around us, even though there may be so many negative things around us. You know, and I liked where he put there, he says that the tune emerges with tune, a chorus of stability and ethereal beauty, sweet yet strong, in harmony with all, in a universe of vibration, outwardly yet grounded in one imprisoned below. And, you know, and it just talks about how in nature and in the universe, there's those good energies that we can look to and, you know, help make us become stronger, if that's possible.
Absolutely. Beautiful comment, Leah. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This is another very eloquent expression of the extremes that humans can go to. There's the phrase from the sublime to the ridiculous. It just has many applications, and this piece it shows dreams in terms of the sublime beauty of the it ends with the sublime beauty that humans can express from the soul, but it begins with the depths of despair and depravity, shackled by the golden chains of comfort zone, and I see that, unable to express the full glory of potential by taking the risks of venue. Here's the sin of complacency. We're capable of great evils, but complacency, ambivalence, to not express an emotion, almost as bad, if not worse. I was telling one of my young friends the other day, they were keening and wailing over destruction of a relationship, and I said, you don't want to hate this person. I said, if you really, really, really want to hurt them, I said, you assign them your indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And this really this takes the extremes of emotion from one end to the other with such grace and eloquence. It's a beautifully written piece.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. Okay. Do you? You're up next, please.
Okay. The Cruelest Game by Sidney Pierce. The pit in my stomach, the void in my chest, the itching in my fingertips. It must be you. There is nothing more to be seen, but much more to be said, with pouted lips and aching hearts, words weigh like rusted anchors bearing deep inside the sands of the ego. You bring me flowers, but they are wilting. You bring me doves, but they cannot fly. You bring me words so full of meaning that your presence leaves them meaningless. It must be you with your curled fingers digging deep into my flesh. It must be you with your breakneck speed leaving me whiplash and cross-eyed. It must be love. End poem.
Wow, I really love that. That was a beautiful read of you. But, you know, this is a powerful poem on the subject of love and, you know, all of its physical attributes that, you know, come along with it. You know, there's a pit in her stomach, a void in her chest, an itching in her fingertips. It must be you. You know, when you're physically reacting to somebody in manners such as this, it's a powerful thing, and love is a deep and powerful thing. So I thought she did a wonderful job on that, and just a beautiful poem on the subject of love. What did you think, Leah?
Well, you know, I thought she did a fantastic job in a way of expressing herself in a relationship when you're in love with somebody, the struggles that you have to go through. And, you know, sometimes when you write about them, you know, sometimes we think things are worse than they are, and other times they are worse than they are. And sometimes when we write about it, it's when we get to express ourselves and how we feel that we really find out where we're at in our relationship and how we feel about that relationship.
Absolutely. Great comment, Leah. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This is a great piece about the roller coaster of emotions that you go through with love. You go through the sublime joy that this person brings you, and how also they just are capable of touching a heart leaves it open to all kinds of damage. And unfortunately, you know, again, you cannot insulate yourself from unhappiness without you cannot insulate yourself from hurt without insulating yourself from happiness. So it's a risk, always it's a risk, but I don't know what's worse, to be hurt or not to feel at all. And I think this talks about the agony of loving someone and knowing that you have opened yourself to them completely. This is a person who can make you feel marvelous, or they can just absolutely destroy you. The way this is said, that the pit in the stomach, the void in the chest, the itching in the fingertips, it must be you. And you do. You feel that. You feel the cascade of emotions every time you even think about this person. But it's, again, I think I would rather experience that the extremes of emotion to feel nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed.
Beautiful comments, everybody. And so I've got the next poem up. It's by Tynaski, and he has a poem. I mean, he has a SoundCloud, and the poem is called In Search of.
Dirges, dried and beaten, singing voices voids, meandering through meaningless, lost, scattered souls, homeless, hopeless, ghosts roaming, moaning, surrender. Concrete hanging ruins, throwing rocks around. I'm looking for my woman. Ringing ears, frozen explosions, bloodied, callous hands, searching suspended essence, pleading for any breathing sound. Siren screams, becomes muted silence. I desperately search for life. And inside these hollow shells, only finding buzzing machine guns, charred burning remnants, resembling theaters. It's spring. The sky becomes azure, and the crocuses gave me a drifting moment of hope. I saw her floating with long veils so many years, frozen in a frame, young as Ophelia, a white phantom contrasting nicely with charcoal embers, murmuring ballads in billowing breeze. Kissing her breast, unfolding a metal wreath surrounding her head, a Christ child of nature with crimson clovers weeping over her shoulder. So very young, continents, open mouths, pillow pillars beneath her, asleep, stretched, heavy overgrowth, warm green eyes under sun-soaked sheets, feet becoming flowers, sleeping, smiling, eggshell infant, gentle without shallow air, keeping her warm, humming insects, don't disturb her nest. It was once innocence written on walls, cobblestone roads, glowing poppies in wild, endless fields, rolling tumbleweeds among hickory lanes, tall towers reaching the sky. At peace, with seemingly worthless weapons at her side, caught inside a dream with buttoned bodice around the body like a glove, now free of space, time, dissolving winter footprints. Under ocean, I stare at her the night. Morning arrives, my grasping eyes stinging with extinguished flames. Air outside burns. I'll pull them out and get rid.
Wow, that was a powerful poem. And, you know, he says in his author's notes, I have volunteered to help out Ukrainian war refugees. I only hope for a peaceful resolution to end the war so that the people affected by this war can rebuild their lives. Wow, that's an epic poem on the subject of seeking, you know, in search of. And I thought it was just powerful metaphors, powerful descriptions, powerful emotions throughout the poem. Beautiful job, Kaina. Tenacity. And Lee, what did you think?
Well, I think this is beautifully penned with all the imagery that is going on in Ukraine right now and what the people and the children are suffering. I really like this stanza because that's not what we see anymore. What we see is twisted metal, all buildings gone. It doesn't matter if it's something that is of valuable historical, doesn't matter if it's a hospital, doesn't matter if it's a school, because to the Russians, nothing matters. And right here, this is just horrifying because in my mind, I can see the images and the news and the tears from children and women screaming and, you know, all those dead bodies of grandparents all over the floor and pregnant. It's horrifying. And right here where he says, it was once innocent, written on the walls, cobblestone roads, glowing poppies in the wild, endless fields, rowing tumbleweeds among hickory lanes, tall towers reaching the sky. And when you listen to these people, this is all they want back. They want their country back. They want to be in their own homes and these beautiful areas that, you know, that they have there. They want to be there with their families and celebrate it and learn about history. And now, you know, we just see what's going on in the news. It's horrifying.
Yeah, it truly is. Thank you for that comment, Lee. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I'm struck by the style of it, the piece. A beautiful piece of writing, very, very emotional, deeply emotional. But what really surges forward at me is the style of it. It's reminiscent, very, very reminiscent to me of Bukowski. It has a beat poetry flavor to it, very stylized in the beat poetry style. but it is like the beat poetry. It is it captures a moment in time when something historic is going on, and expresses it in such a way that it brings forward the humanity of the event rather than the history of it.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Bobby.
Mind? No. I've never been in love. Okay, here we go. I'm pulling it up right now. And we have Okiskun. I've never been in love, but I imagine it'd feel like this. These are promises kept on the sweat, blood, and tears we've shared. Life may bring hardship and pain. I promise we'll always be there for you all the same. Over months and years, we will stay as one. I promise you'll be the moon and I the sun. Violently only if necessary, I promise to defend your worth and dignity. During times when we see the sides of each other we do not like, I promise to not play games with your mind or heart. Even when times seem foul, I promise to nourish your happiness. Obstacles abound, I vow to accept, cherish, and adore you. With all that you get, all of me, all that you get, all I ask is honesty in thought, deed, and word. Rest in me. Let me carry. Help me of the burdens. Hell may be our next objective, to meet heaven with you. My promises come with reward if you stick around. Until or unless you send me away, I promise these to you every day. To give and receive from me to you and you to me.
Beautiful poem, beautiful read, Bobby, on this beautiful poem. You know, it's a beautiful poem. It's full of that deep resonance that resonates in it, you know, a loving relationship, you know, where you are the sun, and violently only if necessarily, I promise to defend your worth and dignity. You know, I mean, we'll all step up for our mate when it comes time, and, you know, and then rest in me. Let me help carry some of the burdens. Tell me our dear next objective. To me, heaven is with you. My promises come with reward, so if you stick around, until or unless you send me away, I promise these to you every day, all to give and receive from me to you and you to me. Yeah, that's a loving relationship right there. Beautiful read as well, Bobby. Lee, what did you think?
Well, you know, for me, this is like listening to the wishes of somebody very young that hasn't experienced a full-term relationship. But she says that even though she doesn't know what it's like, she's never been in love, she says that she has the core about her personality, where she knows within herself that she can make promises, even though she hasn't experienced it yet, you know, that they will share their life and their hardships and pain. And, you know, and it says for the many months and years as they stay as one. And, you know, she says that I'll defend your worth and your dignity, even though each of them will have, which is, you know, you have to be honest about a relationship. Since, like I said before, two different individuals will have two different likes and two different loves and two different things that, you know, that they may hate about somebody. But, you know, the point is that she realizes that there's going to be differences in a relationship, and she doesn't mind, and she can do it. She can do it.
Yeah. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This seems like a love letter to me. I just and reading it, it has the I'm captured by the style. I see the message. I enjoy the message, but it's the delivery that's really captured me. Very colloquial style, but it's almost a blend of lyrical and colloquial, which I'm finding fascinating. I promise to defend your worth and dignity. I promise not to play games with your mind or heart. It is a love letter. It's a pledge. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It may be young love, but it also may be the voice of experience, of the experience of not having these things, and realizing how much it hurts not to have them. The protagonist is promising to accept, cherish, and adore, because maybe they weren't accepted or cherished. The promise to nourish your happiness, maybe they weren't nurtured. Honesty and thought, maybe they did not have that in their relationship. So sometimes we tend to want to give what we didn't receive, but we value.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see.
Good
in this
point.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. And so I've got the next poem up, and this is by Loud Hallways, and it's called Puppy Love. All bark and no bite. Am I planning my life around puppy love? My voice may halt, shake, and stutter, but I could never deceive you. But why am I always the last to know about you? Maybe I've been scared of you, making me look like the fool, because it's been happening over and over. But why do I cover for you and pretend that I've been in the loop? I guess I'm too weak to defend my own boundaries, but I'm tired of surprises that threaten my stability. I am all that I have, so forgive me for forgetting me. End poem. Well, that was a beautiful poem. It's engaging, you know. It takes you through this journey in her mind where, you know, is she with the right person or is it not the right person? I guess I'm too weak to defend my own boundaries, but I'm tired of surprises that threaten my stability. I am all that I have, so forgive me for protecting me. Yeah, just a wonderful statement on love. And what did you think, Lee?
Well, you know, for me, it sounded like she was writing in a diary to herself, you know. You know, that she's questioning the relationship she's in now. You know, does she want an adult relationship or does she just want a puppy love relationship? Like a lot of things that you see middle school and high school kids do. She says, I'm not going to deceive you, but she says, why am I always the last to know to find out what it is that you've been doing? You know, and then she says here, maybe I've been scared of you making me look like the fool because it's been happening over and over again. You know, and I really think that's sad for somebody to take advantage of somebody like that, because it's deeply hurtful and it makes you question yourself. And then when you actually look at it, why am I questioning myself? It's you that I need to question.
Yeah, exactly. Bob, what did you think?
This is an interesting piece. It talks about puppy love, but I see in here, this is someone who is feels like their core values are being tested. Here, the person that they want to give their love to is asking them to depart from their core values. Why am I always the last to know about you? Why do I cover for you and pretend I've been in the loop? Here's a person who, mm-hmm. who's realized that they've been asked to surrender their core values. And in doing that, they relinquish too much of what makes them themselves. I guess I'm too weak to defend my own boundaries, There it is right there. But I'm tired of surprises that threaten my stability. And they've come to the realization that in this relationship, they've been asked to surrender too much of themselves to the relationship, to sublimate too much of themselves. And now they're in the process of taking themselves back.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd like to thank you ladies for calling in tonight to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Much love.
Absolutely.
Had a great time.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for calling, Bobby.
Oh, you're welcome.
I love having you. Thank you, Pam, and Sharp, and Frank, and everybody who hung out with us, and Diane. Thank you guys so much.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Good night.
Besitos a todos. Love.